Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 121 of season 7 of Movie Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again from 5 minutes of Banzai and 5 minutes of Trouble is Josh Horowitz. Just don't cause any trouble,
Hello.
Josh.
No trouble. No trouble for me. No.
Even 5 minutes.
We're all fine here. Right.
Welcome back to the show on this Saturday episode, which most people are surprised to probably hear if you weren't paying attention yesterday, that we're going to be here today and tomorrow also. You get
yes,
the full weekend of things.
That's right. You get to listen to us. What better way to spend
That's
a weekend?
True. That's true. I can agree with that. And so minute 121 begins with John getting an idea and ends with Zeus giving some advice.
Right. Ideas and advice. That's this
That's
episode.
That's right.
With a lot of big explosions in the middle.
Yeah, a few curse words and explosions and things like that. You know, typical things that you expect from a Die Hard movie. So, you know,
right.
It sort of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended things yesterday with John trying to figure out what he's going to do with a very Joker-esque version of Simon, who is just smiling.
Yeah, no, this minute starts out with some good music that accompanies the camera shots. We actually get three very distinct notes that are the cable that's next to the neon sign.
Yes.
I like when music does that. There's actually a tier, you know, having to do with film music where they're kind of Mickey Mousing it, you know, where the music is actually has exactly what to do with what we're seeing on screen, but it works here. You know, this is the climax. We expect something like that.
I've actually never heard that name before.
Yeah.
Mickey Mouse.
Yeah. Because of the whole cartoon elements, you know, in a Mickey Mouse cartoon,
of
everything
synchronizing,
is going to be
like
totally, yeah. Like the music will very much have something to do with what we're seeing on screen, that as opposed, and I'm trying to remember where the whole Mickey Mousing thing falls into place. I think it's like whether the characters themselves are aware of the music that's playing or not, but this is a term I remember studying back in school.
Interesting. Okay, that's very cool. That's very cool. All right, so John is trying to figure out what to do here. He looks around, he sees the helicopter, and he happens to see above the helicopter some wires that are going across, electrical wires.
Right.
When Katya was flying this helicopter, she would have thought to, you know, stay clear of the high wires. You know, that sort of it sort of is, you know, the ABCs of flying, but I guess it's also part of the ABCs of trying to put together a good a relatively good thrilling ending to a movie. You know.
Well, that is assuming, of course, that she saw it. I mean, that whole area is certainly not meant to have a low-flying aircraft. You know, generally, if there's ever going to be any sort of like tall poles or wires that airplanes might get too close to, they'll have like big red lights that strobe to help remind the pilots not to get that low. So I just think, you know, they've got that one spotlight. It's dark. You know, we can give them a little bit of slack here.
Apparently.
Oh, one thing I wanted to note about this scene here, it's good camera work because you've got these quick camera movements where, you know, we go from the rotors to the power line to the neon sign. And I can only assume that this probably took a bunch of different takes to be, because, you know, the cameraman has to get the exact spots and in focus. You know, if there ever is a sort of a stunt credit that would go to a cameraman, this might be one of them. He had to hit it just
right. Just like John had to hit it just right. You know, John, you know,
exactly.
John is not the best shot because, again, it goes back to what we were talking about yesterday. If the characters are good shots, then the movie's a lot shorter. You know, so.
Right.
So, you know, it makes you wonder how, you know, I guess in the climax of these movies, he is a good shot. That's what it comes down to. John, I guess John is only a good shot when the pressure is really, really there. You know, and you,
And how hard do you think it truly is to be able to hit a cable like that with a pistol at distance, you know, such that
it
will
hard is
fall?
It for someone normal or for a John McClane?
Well, yeah, when you're John McClane, it just works.
That's right.
Yes.
And, you know, it's interesting that he actually thinks of this idea, you know, because, I mean, have you ever seen the movie The Patriot with Mel Gibson? Okay. So there's a point, where he's talking to his two young sons that, and they're about to go ambush, you know, a group of redcoats. And he says, aim small, miss small. Easier to hit a larger target than a small target.
But I mean, this whole concept is something that's happened in, you know, films and you know, theater forever. You know, the whole idea.
Yeah, but this is a movie from the Revolutionary War. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't able to see those movies at the time, you know, but hitting chandeliers and all.
I mean, this is a trope, basically.
Oh, for sure. You know,
the idea of hitting something and then that causes the
yeah,
device.
Of course. Yeah. It's the domino effect or the chain reaction, whatever you call it. Which again is really fun to watch. You know, it's the idea that something. What I'm trying to think of what movie there's something that I'm thinking about in some movie where someone does something. Oh, I know what it is. It's in Back to the Future. You know, when Doc Brown, you know, has the car go when he's showing the model, you know, and he apologizes for not being painted or up to scale. And then, you know, it just the car flies off the model and like, OK, nothing's going to happen. And then he looks and he sees that it's going towards, you know, it catches fire and then goes towards like
the drapes. And that catches on fire.
The drapes or the rags and stuff like that. Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I can't believe it. You know, it's the whole chain reaction of things, you know. So, yeah, but John knows what he's doing and he takes aim and is able to make that shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see the wire take off. And like you said, it's a great shot where we get to see the wire and the helicopter and the blades.
Yeah.
You know, the way that they move them all together and they do it nicely. And unlike what we saw yesterday, you can actually see that it does look like Simon and Katja are in this helicopter. And they see the sparks fly and they try and get out of there.
Oh, and before we get there, though, I have to point out something taken from another podcast, the overdub alert that I hear on the Godfather Minute. There is an overdub here, I'm pretty sure. When he says, say hello to your brother, you never see his mouth move.
That's right.
So.
Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. So John, I'm going to wait a few seconds, but I'm just going to make a point that I think that was the wrong line that should have been here, but whatever. He says, you know, say hello to your brother. And then Simon screams to Katja, get out of here. And as the helicopter tries to make its way out of there, it gets caught up. The blades get caught up in the high wire. And as you mentioned, they do some amazing pyrotechnics here. You know, the way that they get the sparks to spin and fly and stuff like that, and eventually completely blow up this helicopter is just great.
You know, I have a thing that kind of bothered me a little bit when I watched this, though, and I tried watching it a bunch of times and kind of like in slow motion and stuff. To me, when I see this, it doesn't so much seem like the blades of the helicopter are hitting that wire that's falling. To me, it looks like they're just getting too close to that big metal pole, and that wire that fell down was a distraction to them, but they were hitting the pole, and that's what was causing those sparks and eventually it to blow up. Maybe that wasn't it, but that's what it looked like to me.
Okay, I can see what you're talking about with that, but I mean the way that it looks like it catches fire from the electric wires. It doesn't catch fire from hitting the pole.
Yeah, and that was another question I had when I saw it. You know, my thought there about, well, why is the thing exploding like that? So was it that the sparks from the rotor, you know, was igniting the massive amount of fuel in the helicopter, and that's what caused the explosion?
That would be my guess. That's the way it looked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it doesn't explode once, but it actually explodes five times.
Well, of course. Come on. You can't have something explode once. It's the same idea that in any movie where a car crashes, everyone they have to get everyone out of the car right away before it explodes. Cars will always explode. In real life, that doesn't always happen. Obviously, it unfortunately does happen sometimes, but not every car that gets into an accident is going to explode.
Right.
And
But I really
no.
like the I like the rotating light effect. It reminds me of those pinwheels that sometimes you see
Yes.
during the fireworks shows and
Yes.
stuff.
I agree with you on that. And I mean, it's just really, they give us a few angles of it exploding and stuff like that.
Oh
It's
yeah.
just done very well. From a technical perspective, it's great. Again, from a storytelling perspective, as I mentioned, it's not amazing, but it's still fun to watch. I guess.
And there was something else I noticed about 19 seconds into this clip. You see this big chunk go flying out. And when I watched it the first time, I was thinking, whoa, is that Simon's body going flying? That would have been pretty cool. But
No,
no,
it's
it's
not.
just a
It's
chunk of a
not
helicopter.
just a chunk of helicopter. It's not, that's not Simon's body. That would have been cool. Yes. It would have been cool. Well, actually, if it would have been blown from the wreck, he would have probably somehow survived.
Right, or you'd see like half his body like kind of crawling forward and
That's right.
trying to get that last shot in or
That's right. But I guess it's better this way, that doesn't need anything else. And then after it explodes and everything is on the ground and everything like that, and then John is just looking on, and then he just nonchalantly says his iconic line as he's lifting his head up. He goes, "Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker!" And I think it would have been much more effective had he said that instead of "Hello, say hello to your brother." I mean, "Say hello to your brother" is a great line. But if you're thinking about Die Hard and you're thinking about, okay, where can you say the yippee-ki-yay motherfucker? It's when does he say it in the other movies? He says it in Die Hard 2. He says it when he's about to when he's about to light the fuel, that's going to blow up the plane. That's a great spot. I mean, you could interchange it with him saying, "Say hello to your brother," also, which again wouldn't have made any sense in that movie, but this is John's iconic line. That's the one you're supposed to do right before he kills the bad guy. I'm trying to remember.
Though,
He says it. He says it
interestingly enough,
because he
though,
says it to Hans also right before he shoots him.
but here's the thing, though. I mean, yes, it's fan service, and that's his line, of course. But it made the most sense in Die Hard 1. I mean, the
Yes.
whole talk about him being a
That's right.
cowboy,
And being
So
partial
okay,
to Roy
that
Rogers.
yippee-ki-yay. But but it has nothing to do with anything really in the second and the third movies. Unless that's just he thought that was a cool line and he would use that anytime, dramatic stuff would
It was a
happen.
catchphrase. That's all it
Oh.
is. So John McClane needed his catchphrase. He was being interviewed in Time magazine and on Nightline, and they'd say, "So what do you have to say, John?" And John would say, "Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker." That's John McClane's
But I'm
line.
a little disappointed that we didn't hear Samuel L. Jackson say the line. That would have been the most appropriate thing, especially, with the whole, profanity part, because he's known for that so often.
Okay,
But
I definitely hear
sadly,
what you're saying with that, but it would have been
yeah.
really strange if Zeus would have known that that's John's catchphrase.
Or better yet, if they split it. So he goes, yippee-ki-yay, but before he can say it, then you hear Zeus off screen say,
No, okay. There, that could possibly work also. Which is, which is better and which should be there and which shouldn't. I don't know, but
But you need it. That's the bottom line. It's not going to be a Die Hard movie without the line.
correct. Correct. Even in the two other movies that were the two appendices, will be
Appendices.
mentioned, but it's just not.
And you gotta think when the time comes when Bruce Willis shuffles off this mortal coil, will that be on his tombstone?
You never know. You never know. What's gonna be on Samuel L. Jackson's tombstone in 100 years from now? It's probably
There
just gonna
has
say
to be
"bad
profanity on there. There has to be.
motherfucker." That's right. Oh, come on. There's nothing, in my opinion, it's got to be, his the catchphrase on his wallet from from Pulp Fiction. Bad mother, that
Oh,
nothing else can nothing else comes to mind of what it could be. But who knows? Hopefully we won't find out for many decades about that. So so again, I think that this isn't the most opportune time to do it. It sounds, like you said that the say hello to your brother sounds as if they ADR'd it in. So it's very possible that he originally said yippee-ki-yay, and then someone said, oh, well, maybe we should say it, 10 seconds later after the whole thing. So that maybe that's dubbed in also. They could have played around with that in some way, shape, or form. Yeah, I don't know. Oh well, that's the way it is.
And
That's what
but
they decided to do here.
after all that said and done, it's all laughs at the
Oh, for sure.
Looks like
John
John
then
got his attention. Wah
that's right. That's right. John starts walking back towards Zeus, who has been extricated from the helicopter, and they just unceremoniously lumped him on the curb. And then Zeus goes, looks like you got his attention. And he goes, yeah, it looks like it. And then he goes, think we should call a fire truck? He goes, ah, fuck him. Let him cook.
Let him cook. Oh, yeah. The thing I noticed in this scene is that Samuel Jackson has quite the teeth. You see his smile,
Yes.
almost unnaturally white, but yeah, he's got good teeth.
Yeah, and he's still got that blood dripping from his chin, dripping from his broken lip.
That's another sort of diehard staple. You've got to be able to show lots of wounds.
That's true. Lots of wounds, as long as it doesn't mess up with the continuity of things, Yeah, but so the humor here gets a little dark with the whole thing, and then John goes, "Oh shit!" And he goes, "What? What?" He goes, "I left Holly hanging on hold." He goes, "Call her back." I don't know. She's gonna be pissed. And then just goes, "Ah, she'll get over it."
Yeah, well, here's a moment where I kind of think if they did make an airplane version of this film, then he says, "Oh,
Surely you're
I left her
joking.
on hold." Well, then at this moment you would probably cut to the payphone with its receiver still hanging down, and we'd hear Holly still saying, "John, John, are you there?" And
That's right.
it's been like 30 minutes and she's still doing it.
That's right. Hey, I find it very strange that only right now is John remembering the fact that he back in Connecticut. It's like, let's say, I mean, I don't know how long it takes to travel by helicopter, but let's just say for argument's sake, it takes an hour. Okay? It probably takes more, but let's say it takes an hour. Okay, so this means that it's been a few hours since John left it hanging there, and what he's been so emotionally stressed and full of adrenaline that he totally forgot about the fact that he just left his wife hanging.
I'll
I
buy
see,
it.
I don't
I
buy
mean,
it.
you could be
I don't.
fair with that one. He's going through a lot.
He's going through a lot, but now he's only recalling the fact that he didn't hang up the phone.
Well, he can finally, breathe easy and start focusing on the things that matter.
Right. It's true.
Though
And
I was
I like the way
surprised
that
that they were
they
still
make.
married, honestly.
Ah, okay.
I mean, we did point out that, yeah, he's still wearing the wedding ring. I had a question from a previous minute because he does, call her, collect, I think it was. Who does he
Yes.
speak to initially when he got through on the call? Was that a
He
kid
speaks
or
to
was
the
that like
to...
somebody that she's living with?
No. He spoke to the new I guess housekeeper. They got rid of Paulina and now they have Carmine.
Oh, he spoke with the housekeeper. Okay.
The fact that he knows that the housekeeper's name is Carmine, and he's saying, Carmine, accept the
Oh, I
charges, and
get
she
it. Yeah. And then the other question I have is, did they bring back the actress who played Holly just to get the VO?
I don't think so. I highly doubt. I mean, let's put it this way. On IMDb, Bonnie Bedelia is not credited or even listed as uncredited. for doing that. It doesn't really, it's of no consequence who actually was saying hello on the phone.
Sure.
You know, that type of thing. It would have been cool if they would have said, if they would have given us that, but they did not.
Yeah, those are the easiest gigs, I'll tell you. You know, if you worked on a film and they just want to bring you back for just some off-screen VO, it's like, yeah, that's easy. We'll do that.
Makes sense. Definitely makes
Yeah.
sense. And that's how this minute
Yeah.
ends. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute?
No, I think we covered it all. Good stuff.
Okay. So every well, since you won't be with us on Tuesday, so every Tuesday we have a segment called Trilogy Tuesday, which we will deal with today, which is Josh's top five trilogies. So I'm always a little bit flexible with with how people want to call movies, how people want to create trilogies.
Yeah.
So okay, so Josh, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Yes, I will do that. Okay, my number five. I would say the Naked Gun series, Naked Gun 1, 2.5, and 33 and a third. Just love those Leslie Nielsen films. Just
You are the third
hilarious.
person in a row to put that on your list.
Ah, oh, very good.
So
Yeah,
you are in good company.
the funny thing about the Naked Gun series, I actually had Ed on the Naked Gun series, older gentleman, very
I
nice
know.
guy, and he had a chance to work with all these people and was still doing acting and voiceover stuff even into his 90s. So pretty cool.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, like those series, first one was always, I thought, the best, but the other ones got wacky too, and I love those title names. So
Yeah, that's true.
that's number five. Okay, number four,
Okay.
I would have to say Star Wars 1 through 3. So the prequel trilogy of Star Wars. I mean, say what you will about, the scripts and, the different actors or whatever, but as a trilogy, I mean, I thought it was pretty entertaining. I think I probably like the third one of the bunch more than the second and the first, but a good sort of new entry to the Star Wars trilogies, plural.
Okay,
That's
very
number
cool.
four. Number three, Lord of the Rings, Two Towers and Return of the King. Also very, very epic films. I will admit that was a little slow. Not as action-packed as the other ones, but I got to see them all in theaters. A good three movies right there. Very entertaining. Okay, and now number two. Number two, I would say Star Wars 4, 5, and 6. Gotta love the original trilogy of the Star Wars movies. Of the bunch, probably liked Empire the most, and then Star Wars, then Return of the Jedi. And finally, number one, The Godfather 1, 2, and 3. Though arguably the third one isn't the best, but just amazing movies on their own right. And that's pretty much it.
All right, excellent. That is great. So I think this is actually a good time for, I mean, you mentioned yesterday that this was the very first time that you've seen this movie. So what was your overall impression of this movie?
It was very entertaining. Car chase scenes, good action, very much felt like a Die Hard movie. And the whole buddy buddy element between having Samuel L. Jackson in there and Bruce Willis, I thought was done very well. There are some cringe moments, especially near the beginning when he's wearing the sign and having to deal with stuff in an unfriendly neighborhood. That was a little hard to watch. But overall, yeah, it was entertaining. Yeah, I would definitely recommend it for people who haven't seen this sort of movie as an example of kind of late 80s, early 90s action films.
Okay. Are you saddened that you didn't get the chance to see this when it came out, or now that you've watched it, you're like, okay,
Yeah, I mean, it was good. It wasn't, I'd say, the end all in action films. I think that some of the ones from Schwarzenegger fit that bill. But very entertaining. A good movie to probably just watch if you want to see some, stuff blow up and some good action stars from the 90s.
Okay, and did you like the connection between Simon and Hans, or did you think it felt a little too tacked on? Like, were you
Between
surprised?
Simon and Hans. Oh, the bad guys?
No, that the fact that Simon is Hans's brother.
I thought he was good. I mean,
No,
kind of
I'm talking.
your stereotypical
No,
villain,
I'm not
but
talking about the acting by Jeremy Irons. I'm talking about the fact that the reveal that he's Hans's brother.
oh.
Like,
Oh.
what did you think about that? Did
I don't know. I kind of saw it coming. Especially when they mentioned, the German accent and stuff, like, okay, he's probably gonna be related.
you Okay.
But it didn't really change things too much for me. All these movies sort of stick to certain formulas, so it kind of made sense.
Excellent. So, Josh, why don't you tell people once again where they can find you?
Sure, you can find me on joshhorowitz.com. You can see some of the voiceover stuff that I've done and some of the podcasts I've done. Previous podcasts were 5 Minutes of Trouble, which was our talk about Big Trouble in Little China, 5 minutes at a time. We also did 5 Minutes of Banzai. That's Banzai. Talking about Buckaroo Banzai, 5 minutes at a time. And 12 Chimes It's Midnight was a series that I did a couple of years back. I got to narrate all of them and act in a few and even wrote a few of them. And it's sort of like old-time radio style. So these are all podcasts you can check out. I'm also on Audible. If you look up my name, Josh Horowitz, you'll find some of the audiobooks that I've narrated. That's part of my secondary job. And so check them out when you can.
All right, very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Instagram. So tomorrow, Josh and I will be back for a Sunday episode. So until
Yes.
tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
When Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.